Hey guys, welcome into the MMQB podcast. I am not Albert Breer. This is Connor Orr, and I'm with Jenny Frentis, and we're still doing sort of a little bit of a training camp alternate podcast recording schedule, but we're here in New York, and I want to start today's edition talking a little bit about player mental health. I think it's been an interesting week for the topic. Not only do we have Andrew Luck talking about the cycle of pain and rehabilitation that he went through, and that's something that informed his decision to retire at the age of 29, but as we're recording this today on Tuesday, Rob Gronkowski, at a press conference, talked about basically a similar thing, that the night of the Super Bowl, that he couldn't enjoy himself. He was up crying from a hit that he took to his quadricep, and that cycle, that pain, rehabilitation, recovery cycle, contributed to his own retirement at the age of 29 or 30. And so, yeah, I mean, I just think it's a really interesting time that while there's been a lot of great reporting on mental health and scores of examples of players through the years saying that this game does have, you know, a detrimental effect on them post-career, whether it's just mentally or physically or both, these are two extremely visible and high-profile players that have done this, I think, in the last week.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it speaks to players being more willing to be open about it. Both of these cases, you know, it influenced an early retirement, right? And you know, we saw Brian Dawkins at his Hall of Fame speech talk about it. I guess that was two summers ago. And we've seen a lot of players be strong voices. Solomon Thomas from the 49ers talked about not only becoming an advocate for mental health after his sister died by suicide, but he had mental health issues that he needed to confront as well. And we've seen that teams, you know, the NFL and the NFLPA now have in the CBA, you know, regulations for requirements, I guess, for mental health resources available to players on a weekly basis that it wasn't in the CBA before, right? So now it can be penalized, and now it's basically setting a standard for the minimal amount of care that teams should offer players. And so I think it's sort of coming around to this idea that mental health does affect physical health and vice versa, and confronting that more head on.
Do you think that this leads some of the more progressive teams to, like, do you think that this week in particular at least motivates teams to maybe ask more questions, you know, or just be more aware of this?
Yeah, because as we see with teams, they're often not motivated until it affects them on the field,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And here you have cases of, well, it's affecting players on the field, right? Whether they're taking a mental health leave or it's a factor in retirement, or, you know, it's just you see a player's, you know, you see the impact, and it shouldn't have to come to that, right? But I think we often see that the motivation is like, oh, wow, this is affecting my team on the field, so let's do something to address it.
Yeah. So let's start there. I mean, Andrew Luck, obviously, I mean, I think we've all heard the news this weekend, stunned the football world by walking away from the game at 29, a little less than 2 weeks away from the regular season. I mean, what do you make of his ultimate legacy? I mean, where do you think that Andrew Luck will be talked about 10, 15, 20 years from now?
It's possible that his legacy is opening the door for players to make these kinds of decisions.
Great.
I mean,
yeah,
we have seen some of these decisions the past several years, but this is a starting quarterback 2 weeks before the season, giving up $500 million essentially over the next X years, and perhaps normalizing it. You know, I think there's a focus on, okay, he was the best prospect coming out of college that we'd seen, you know, since who knows when,
yeah,
and he was the number one pick, and the Colts had it made going from Peyton to Andrew Luck, and what a missed opportunity. But I think a lot of the message that he sent was so powerful about this. He wasn't happy in life, and this wasn't what he needed to do to have the life that he wanted to leave. It was very inspiring, Connor, for, you know, those of us who mull our daily existence.
I was going to say, like, it is sort of like you get that hit of, like, you imagine just one day coming into gobs and gobs of money and then disappearing to a small town in outside of France and just reading, you know, for a month and just getting better, healthier, jogging, you know, and then he's going to do all that. So good for you, Andrew. Yeah. I'm really happy for you.
Yeah. Very inspiring.
I think like part of the conversation though needs to be that, you know, when people are saying this is so great, this is so great, this is so great, there's still a segment of the NFL population, and I would say a very large segment of the NFL population that can't afford to make this decision, right?
Right.
Whether, you know, you have families that you need to take care of, you have financial obligations, like, you know, like a lot of quarterbacks, you know, Andrew Luck came from a well-to-do family. I think he was raised to consider all that stuff in his headspace, you know, personal health and everything like that. And so while it's sort of a victory, I think, for the mental health crowd, I think we need to care as much about the people who need to play the NFL, you know, and that at the same time, they can't just walk away, you know, and pursue their mental health. You know?
Yeah. And for those players who are in that situation, the idea of how the team is caring for them physically is, and the Luck situation puts that into perspective. I mean, did the Colts do enough to protect him? You know, obviously this started before the current regime, but he was really, he suffered a lot physically, and did he have to, right?
Yeah.
Could the team have been more diligent and vigilant in recognizing things earlier on and protecting him from playing? I think there's a lot of lingering questions there about the culpability of those in power in the early stages of his career.
Yeah, you hate to make that leap that the Colts didn't come after him for the remainder of that fight. I think they reached some sort of financial settlement, but I feel like if they fought him on that, you're opening the door to legitimate questions about why he ended up that way in the first place. Like the timeline, the injury timeline, I think it was last year, 2 years ago, I went through Roto World up those injury updates and just wrote down every single time that he was mentioned on the injury report. It's stunning that he was asked to play in some of these situations. I don't know if it was forced to play or however you want to put it, but I mean, they ruined a franchise quarterback. I mean, this is their own doing, I feel like, you know?
It got to this point where a calf or ankle or whatever, a seemingly minor injury, and
yeah,
you never want to say minor injury because obviously what these players put their bodies through, but something that didn't require surgery, but that was the breaking point.
Right.
And it wasn't just this, it was the cumulative effect of all of these other past experiences that had been largely negative for him.
I think one thing that I wanted to kind of ask you about is, how do you think the Colts are handling this? Because I thought it was at least interesting that they're being very upfront about everything. I think we've both seen cataclysmic events in the NFL where teams just shut down and they say, we're not going to talk about this and we don't want anybody being asked about it and let's move on. But I mean, I do think that there was at least a head-on, decision to confront this, you know, and to put the coach out there to discuss things that they talked about in their team meeting vaguely, but at least more openly than coaches normally do, to make Jacoby Brissett available as much as they have over the last few days. I mean, I do think it's at least smart to not bury this, you know, and pretend that it never happened.
I thought that was a good point you raised in the morning huddle, Connor. But
plug for the huddle.
But I agree. That night, the story leaks. They have him do the press conference then. They have Irsay and Ballard and Reich sitting in the audience, and then they talk. I mean, that would not have been my expectation, right? Having covered the league as long as we have, we often see exactly what you described, teams trying to sweep things under the rug or delay and defer. And that night, the news was out, and they made sure that everyone there talked about it, and I did think that was somewhat unusual.
I guess you almost have to, right? Though you can't just dismiss it like it's not going to happen. But every year there seems to be a team that gets that giant sort of whatever it is diversion put on them, and it's so interesting to look at the different ways that everyone tries to handle it. Like it can be fuel, or it can really just ruin your season.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
In 10 years and 15 years, I know this is sort of a version of what I asked you before, but do you think that we know more about Andrew Luck, or do you think that Andrew Luck is going to just, is his goal ultimately to disappear, or do you imagine him more as someone who wants people to know exactly what happened that led him to this point?
I'm not certain we could say he won't play again.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Irsay sort of teased that, oh, you know, Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods,
yeah,
and then sort of they've tried they've certainly walked that pack, right? You know, well, I don't, you know, he just certainly isn't planning on playing now. And his decision is a final one. And his own words didn't indicate that he would play again. But you do wonder if you have a year or two off and your body totally heals and you are in a different mental and physical place, do you want to try again? So I don't know that we could totally rule that out at this point.
I wonder what it's like to be Andrew Luck. And I totally understand that the question needs to be asked. And I think it was like one of the third or the fourth question that he was asked during that press conference. But the same thing I thought about Rob Gronkowski, where the only thing that people want to ask him about, it really is, okay, you're going to change your mind. Like that built-in assumption that they're going to change their mind because football is so great and it's the best thing ever. But obviously it's not for them, you know? And it must be interesting that they're trying to detach and they're trying to get away. But then immediately everything is about, well, this given that they're eventually going to change their minds at some point.
Right.
Know?
And not to lump onto the speculation, but I think that you can't say it won't happen.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So how about some fun news? You want to talk about some
fun
news?
Sounds great, Connor.
What do we got here for number two?
U.S. soccer star Carly Lloyd turned heads last week when she drilled a 55-yard field goal during a visit to Eagles camp. According to Fox Sports, who spoke to Lloyd's personal trainer, an NFL team offered Lloyd a roster spot for their final preseason game. Lloyd, citing the U.S. team's schedule, declined. So, you know, I think she's got to be smart about it, right?
For sure.
You don't want to just rush in to the final preseason game, but maybe, you know, revisit it. Next year might be tough too. Olympic cycle.
Oh.
If, you know, maybe address it after that. I don't know.
My hope is that this was a genuine offer, right? That this was, we need a kicker and this is great and we want to see this happen.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that was like my first thought when that happened, because it's like, oh, just come kick for the fourth preseason game and everyone will come and watch, you know, and then, you know, we'll just end up going with the kicker that we have, you know, and citing all these differences. I do think that there's certainly a pathway there. I mean, I remember, I think it was Mia Hamm back, and this is after, it might have been like the 99 or 2000 World Cup, back when I had Sports Illustrated for Kids. One of the big stories back then was that she drilled like almost a 60-yard field goal at Arrowhead. I mean, they're phenomenal athletes. This is, and it surprises me that it's still an untapped resource at this point. Like with all the kicking trouble that we've had in the NFL throughout time, like the dawn of time, like why not? You know, like, and I think teams always talk about being progressive and being open-minded, but I mean, this is the third or fourth time that this has happened and everyone's now finally starting to be like, oh, okay, you know, this might be a good idea, you know?
Yeah. And she's smart. She knows how the NFL works, how the cycle of the calendar works, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so joining a team now, of course, doesn't make a lot of sense. But if there's a different time in the off season, you know, when the rosters are at 90 people, and I think she would definitely, you know, if this were something that she trained for and were to work on all of the things that people would say, oh, what about this? And what about a person rushing? Blah, blah, blah. Just take a little time and work on it. She'd be fine. But yeah. I do think, I mean, the interest seems to be legitimate on her end. And so I think the question is, what's the right timing to try to make a go? And I think that would be a pretty cool thing to happen.
Who do you think the mystery team was?
Mystery team. Man, remember when we were covering the Jets and they were chasing after Nnamdi Asomugha and
yes.
There was the mystery team.
Yes.
And it was the Eagles, right?
They were always
team. Team X, you know? So I don't know. Who do you think it is, Connor?
I don't know, but it's funny you brought that up because mystery team became the trend. Even before that, I think it was like 2008 or 2009 during baseball free agency when the Phillies loaded up on all the starting. They got like Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee. And both times, I think it was John Heyman. This is the early days of Twitter. What kept teasing the mystery team. And that's when it became like the big thing. It was like the Nationals, the Yankees, or the mystery team. And then I love the fact that that happened with Nnamdi Asomugha because like it brought it over to football. And then finally we're talking about like a real legitimate mystery team. Maybe the Eagles are the mystery team.
I know.
Team, you
wouldn't
know?
That again. Be interesting again?
Howie Roseman, man. You know? I don't know.
Maybe the Vikings?
I mean, yeah.
And you could just take the Lizzo song, new kicker on the Minnesota Vikings, and you could just blast it at all the games. Really, they should just be hiring us to do these in-stadium promotions.
And this is just off the top of our heads.
Just off the top of our heads.
To your point, too, Mike Zimmer was he's very unhappy with the Vikings kicking situation.
Very unhappy, yeah. So it makes sense.
So before we get to item number two, football season is coming up quick, guys, and DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is celebrating with a huge week one contest. It all starts when Chicago and Green Bay kick off the season on Thursday night with a single-game showdown contest, and that's $2.5 million in prizes up for grabs. So new users who sign up today on DraftKings, use the code BREER, B-R-E-E-R, and you'll receive a free shot at the $1 million top prize. And so, you know, there's nothing that adds to the excitement of watching a game quite like having a shot at $1 million payday. Draft your single game showdown lineup and feel the sweat like never before. It's simple. Just draft six guys from the season opener, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. But you don't have to wait until week one to get on the action. Right now, all users can deposit a bonus of up to $500. So download the DraftKings app now to get in on the action. Now, again, for a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus of up to $500. And as an extra special week one bonus, new users can put in that code BREER to receive a free shot at $1 million with your first deposit. Don't forget, that's code BREER for your free shot at $1 million only at DraftKings. Make it rain. So the Texans head coach Bill O'Brien said that he likes the team's backfield despite a recent setback. Lamar Miller tore his ACL, obviously out for the season. Do you believe him, or do you feel like the Texans, who I described in this as thirsty for validation, are going to make a big boy trade here by the end of the preseason and get another running back?
See, this is the interesting thing about the Texans. They should, in theory, be in this win now mode, right?
Yeah.
But the Clowney situation, you know, in that case, they wouldn't want to trade Clowney, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, now maybe they worry Clowney doesn't show up and blah, blah, blah. But if they're in win now mode, they should want to try to get another running back, and they should not want to trade for Clowney, and they should want just all these pieces to be surrounding their young quarterback on a rookie contract.
Yeah, I said this last year, and I guess they did trade for Demaryius Thomas down the stretch when Will Fuller got hurt, but that didn't feel like enough, right?
Right,
there were available pieces, you know? I guess that they've been a little fast and loose with their draft capital over the years, and they're trying to get some of that back or trying to stabilize that part of it, but I don't know. I don't know if people are under the assumption that this is more stable. Bill O'Brien's acting like a coach who's going to be there for another 10 years. You know what I mean?
Right. And he just executed what could only really be described as a power play.
Right.
So he probably feels like he has that ability to do so. But yeah, I agree with you. It seems like now is the time to be a little bit more urgent.
Get Melvin Gordon down there.
Melvin Gordon, yeah. Yeah.
I think that would... Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, there's obviously a bunch of different things. I got roundly booed on Twitter for saying that I think the Texans could build a at least formidable backfield out of the running backs that the Eagles are going to cut in the preseason. Because I think they have like six or seven really good running backs or guys who have played a lot. Like, I think their leading rusher from last year might not even make the team, you know, this year, Adams. And so it's like, you know, I think that there's some talent there that might come available. What is it? It all comes back to the 2011 Jets. The GM used to call the cut down period. What was it like?
The mini draft.
The mini draft.
The mini draft. Yeah. Every rock, every day. The problem with Gordon, though, would be, would they want to pay him long term?
Yeah.
And then if not, then you're in the same situation as the LA Chargers.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said LA and Chargers there. Could have just said Chargers.
It's for the brand, you know, we're trying to
just
get
making sure
out there.
That people know they're in LA. Sort of.
I think this next one is really interesting. You know, Cam Newton's back at practice. The injury itself was, I think there it was Duke's head of head physician for Duke football said, hey, this is how they examined Liz Frank, the way that they were looking at his foot. And obviously there was a walking boot, but now he's back at practice. I don't know about you, but it seems like that is not a situation that's over for me, you know, in terms of like, okay, he's healthy, he's fine. I think I said in our show notes here, does it still feel like there's a looming cloud of despair hanging over the Panthers?
God, cloud of despair. It's just like describing my life, Connor. I would agree with you because of the way Panthers injuries have sort of lingered or mm-hmm. been underreported in years past, right? We didn't know the full extent of the shoulder injury until after his season was over. And some of that, I suppose, is gamesmanship, but then you could apply that to this case too, right? So I think it's hard to say that it's really not going to be an issue. And, you know, add it to the cumulative concern of like, okay, you know, he was injured last year. Is his shoulder going to be okay? And then now you've got the foot and you just don't know if your quarterback is, you know, either with his arm or his feet is at full strength.
I followed this rabbit hole a little bit, and I realize that this is going to sound very crazy right now, but you have teams that are sort of setting themselves up to be at the top of the draft when these next two theoretically franchise-changing players graduate from Alabama and Clemson or leave to go to the NFL. Carolina would be a really weird wrench in that plan, I think, for a lot of teams. Like, imagine if Cam Newton doesn't play, or imagine if he's a shell of himself and he has a foot issue which takes away a large portion of what makes him a good quarterback. Like, I don't know. I mean, I just don't think people are, you know, planning on Carolina being in the mix there. But, you know, what if, you know, you just follow that line of thinking all the way down the road and it's like, well, new owner, what if he wants to change course? What if he wants to change quarterbacks? Like, Carolina could be very interesting, I think, in 5 or 6 weeks.
Right, because we're kind of getting to that tipping point of are you the same player that was drafted? Are the injuries having a cumulative effect? Age, all of these concerns. So I do think that is a great point, Connor. You got Tua, you got Trevor Lawrence, you know, got some interesting dilemmas in the next few drafts.
If you were a general manager, how secure would you feel in like locking in like a soft tanking plan? Like, would you be like worried about it constantly?
Generally. Yeah. I mean, I'm worried about everything. So, yes, Connor, I would be worried. But no, I agree. I mean, I don't know that you can ever feel great about your tanking plan.
Yeah.
Because the careers are short, so players aren't going to want to go. They're fighting for the roster spots. Your players are not going to go along with your tanking plan.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure I'd feel great about that. Yeah. Suck for luck. I mean, look, that didn't even work out.
True. It's so wild to me that you had Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck and you won one Super Bowl.
It is pretty crazy.
Out of what, like 25 years of those two players, you know, or whatever it was ended up being? Probably less than that, right? Like 15 20, or 16, 20 years
about
of those
20,
two players.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, look at guys like, you've won as many Super Bowls as like, you know, Trent Dilfer with those two quarterbacks, which is pretty amazing, you know?
So Connor, you're making the point that you don't, well, I don't know what point you're making, just that it's pretty amazing. Pretty wild.
What do we have for our last topic
of the
day?
You're setting me up for this one. I purposely haven't read it yet because you kept saying, hey, Jenny, do you want to read topic number 5? Antonio Brown's helmet saga is going to end with a lucrative endorsement deal, prompting scores of people across the Twitterverse to point to Orr's MMQB column on August 19th, in which he said that this exact thing would happen. Are you happy for Brown? And what is it to work with someone who can see the future? The Oracle. The major props to Connor. Are you getting enough credit for this? Prognostication?
Not one person has reached out to me.
Oh, interesting.
This. See, I thought that was the logical end to this all along. Like Tom Brady and the recovery glove and Under Armour and like, you know.
Yeah.
It was always going to happen this way, right? I mean.
Brilliant, Connor.
People need to
give the Oracle more credit than it's receiving currently.
Well, what I was going to say is people have this inclination to monetize everything. And so, like, how was the search for Antonio Brown's helmet not going to be monetized? I mean, of course it was going to be monetized.
Yeah, this was quite a saga. As we're talking, by the way, Connor, there's a photo of Antonio Brown there with the Steelers helmet. What is it? The shut air.
Advantage.
Air advantage. That's right. So there's the old air advantage. And A friend of mine was saying recently that he had gotten a brown jersey for Christmas last year, a Steelers brown jersey.
Oh.
So I said to him, well, you know the rule, you could just paint it, right? You know, just paint it silver and black. I don't know that he found it funny. But this whole helmet saga, I just felt like it was never going, he was never going to win it. The NFL was never going to bend on a rule, right? Mm-hmm. That they, you know, they've been steadfast about that they bargained with the, you know, NFLPA on, right? I mean, there was never going to be a different outcome than him wearing a different helmet.
Yeah.
So now he has less time to adjust to whatever helmet he's going to wear this season. I don't know.
The whole thing left me sour because we've discussed my general pettiness on this podcast many times, but it brought me back to, do you remember when we were in high school, early college years, remember the Revolution helmet that came out? That had like that raised middle part, and it was like initially advertised to reduce concussions.
Yeah, the Riddell Revolution.
Yes. Yeah. So our high school got like 10 of those my senior year, and you know, I was not good, but I figured, you know, I'm one of the whatever.
Oh, I see where this
15
is going.
Seniors on this team, you know, 20 seniors, like didn't get the Revolution helmet, you know, didn't. And I was fifth wave, right? I had the one with the bar still down the center of your face. I couldn't see. You know, Antonio Brown saying he couldn't see. I literally couldn't see because there was a bar over like my eyes.
Sounds,
you know,
like an excuse.
Maybe that's why I was bad. Yeah.
But your point is you can understand feeling left out.
Yeah, a little bit. But I think the nice thing about this is if you're opening up the door to whatever this is, the, I don't know, what do you call it? Like the luxury helmet market or the customized helmet market.
Right.
You know, I do think that that's a good door to open, right? Like that every single player will feel more comfortable eventually down the road. Like, because if you're a player and you see that Antonio Brown has this helmet that was formed to his head and does all this stuff, and what's your first call to your agent to say, you need to make this happen for me? You know, I need one of these helmets too. And, you know, maybe the good thing that comes out of that is 10 years from now, everybody's got a helmet that it's just totally form fitted to their head and it doesn't shake or whatever the problem was with Antonio Brown.
Amazing that Antonio Brown will end up making new helmet technology cool after pushing to wear a 10-year-old helmet. Man, this league, you can just never tell where things are going.
No.
Except if you're Connor Orr.
Just, you know. Stay tuned, guys. That's all I have to say. Stay tuned.
There will be more from the Oracle.
Thanks for listening this week, guys. We really appreciate it.